carries many varieties of whole foods, bulk grains, and nuts. Cox Food Center is located throughout Wisconsin. Proud to support Wisconsin Public Radio.
Hi, I'm Jean Faraca, and this is All About Food on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're going to talk cheese this summer, and I am in the company of two men who really know their cheese. Mike Gingrich is with us. I've just had a taste of his prize-winning Pleasant Ridge Reserve. And I didn't think I was going to have a taste of this cheese because apparently, well, first of all, it's made in very small batches. And now that the word is out that this is as scrumptious as it is, it's going to be difficult to keep the shelves stacked. Benjamin Orphan is with us. He runs the cheese, beer, wine, and coffee department at Whole Foods Madison, where Pleasant Ridge Reserve is one of the featured cheeses. Mike has been a dairy farmer for 20 years in Wisconsin. Before that, he was in the computer business. And how long have you been making this cheese, Mike?
Commercially.
Just 1 year?
Commercially. We made it experimentally for a year prior to that.
And so in just a short time, this cheese has just been awarded Best of Show in the American Cheese Society competition. Benjamin's going to tell us the significance of that.
Okay. American Cheese Society is, their competition is an annual event where artisan cheesemakers from Canada and the United States enter their product. And what makes this competition different than other cheese competitions is that most cheese grading is done on a technical basis, whereas they would start, say, with 100, like in the World Cheese Competition, and by when there are defects, they will break down. Whereas the American Cheese Society also takes into account aesthetics and the overall style of cheese making and Mikey says 376 cheeses in this competition this year, and he was number one. Now there are like 12 or 14 categories. Each one of those will get the best one in that category, and then all of those top winners will compete with each other for the Best of Show, which Mike won his first year out. And I spoke to a couple of the cheesemakers that were there and talked about Mike and his cheese, and they're like, well, where can you go from there? You started at the top. So it's a really, really great thing for him.
How did you learn how to make your own cheese in such a short time? And what goes into making it? I'm still tasting it. There's so many. It just has so much fun. It's really delicious. It's a kind of Swiss cheese, but made in an old world style. It's a washed rind.
That's right.
Rind washed.
Mm-hmm. Well, our model was a French Gruyere style cheese, which is called Beaufort.
Uh-huh.
It's made in the Alpine provinces of France, the Haute-Savoie province exclusively. And that was really what our cheese is derived from. It's distinctly different than Beaufort, however, because of the terroir kind of considerations. In other words, it's different grasses, it's different climates, it's different animals. And the process that we use to make the cheese is slightly different than before. We had to make some adjustments for regulatory reasons and for practical reasons. We didn't have the equipment available to us that they make before and traditionally. So it's not exactly like before, not made exactly like before, but even if it was, it would still taste different because of the regional differences, climate, and vegetation, and so on.
Now, there are many things that make your cheesemaking unique. Let's start with the fact that you have your own herd of cows, Wisconsin cows, obviously, fed and managed using old world practices. Mm-hmm. And that means you move the cows around way we've just, it's rotational grazing.
Correct.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, tell us how you can taste the difference. How does that result in this fabulous cheese?
Well, I had always heard that from old cheesemakers that the best milk for cheesemaking was June milk. When the cows first hit that fresh grass, the milk they produce has special flavor qualities that really make a delicious cheese. And with rotational grazing, What we do is we basically try to give the cows that kind of grass all season long.
How do you do that?
Well, you take a large pasture and divide it up into a lot of small pastures.
We have 20 separate pastures.
And the cows are only in pasture for a day or two.
And then it's only back from the soil.
And so all during the grazing season, they're being introduced into new pastures that have either been clipped or grazed down 3 or 4 weeks previous and have grown back to about 10 inches, which is the optimum size from a nutritional point of view. But it's also the optimum size, it turns out coincidentally, from a flavor point of view, that they're getting this the equivalent of this early season grass that these old cheesemakers used to say made such great cheese. They're getting that all season long.
Okay.
And so this was sort of the theory that we went into this cheesemaking venture with. The data was all anecdotal, so we were a little concerned about its validity. But I met a fellow, a researcher at the University of Wisconsin, a fellow named Bob Lindsay, who's been doing research on dairy flavors for 25, 30 years or more. I don't know how long. And he sat me down and explained just exactly what these compounds are that produce the dairy flavors in milk and how they're present in much greater quantity in the milk of cows that are fed fresh vegetated pasture as opposed to cows that are fed machine harvested feeds that have either been dried or wilted down. A lot of these compounds are lost or oxidized into different compounds as soon as the grass is cut. And so because our cows eat that fresh pasture, they have an abundance of these particular compounds. So when he told me that, I felt, okay, that verified the anecdotal evidence that I had, and that was really kind of a major piece of information that gave us the confidence to go ahead with this project.
And then, Benjamin, you were telling me that the next step in all of this is worth focusing on, and that is that Mike takes the milk to Cedar Grove.
That's correct.
Which is a cheesemaking facility.
Yep.
With very special features.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, I would say the first thing to continue on what Mike was saying about the milk is that this is an unpasteurized product, so that you're not going to find very common in a lot of Wisconsin cheeses, but in Europe, that's all the great cheeses are unpasteurized.
I also heard you say just the other day that if it becomes illegal to make unpasteurized cheese, you're out of the business.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's threats that we will not be able to import it or manufacturers in the States will not be able to make it. And if that happens, I'm quitting. I'll go find some other line of work because all of my favorite cheeses I will not be able to sell. Maybe I'll just go to Europe and sell cheese. I don't know. But let's hope we don't get to that point because I like my job. So that's part of it. Now, Cedar Grove does have a special facility where they have a whey reclamation set up where they have a means to deal with basically what is a byproduct of cheese making that you can't just send down the sewer. And they have a little greenhouse behind where I don't know a lot of the specifics on how they deal with it, but it is an ideal situation for how to return the whey back into the earth with doing the least amount of damage. And you may know more about the specifics of that, Mike, but I'm not.
Yeah, all the wastewater, and a cheese factory produces a lot of wastewater, is processed through 8 sequential holding tanks, and by the time it gets out of that 8th tank, it can just be put right back into a stream. The phosphorus levels are way down. It's basically bacteria that consumes all the things in the water that you don't want to get back on the land. It works very good. DNR is delighted with it.
So, this is a collaborative, in a way.
Yes, as I started to say, we had a lot of help. Cedar Grove Cheese, Bob Wills and his staff at Cedar Grove got involved, with us very early on. I explained to them kind of what I was thinking about doing and asked if they were willing to cooperate and work with us. And Bob found it interesting and said, yeah, he'd be glad to. And he not only was willing to rent his facilities to us so we could make our cheese in his facilities, he hired me because in order to get a cheesemaker's license, there's an apprenticeship requirement, so I had to work someplace to fulfill that requirement. So I worked at Cedar Grove prior to getting my cheesemaker's license, and then now we...
Your learning curve must be very high. I mean, you go from apprentice to master in a matter of months here?
We have a lot of advantages. I mean, we have a unique milk supply, and we can control it ourselves because we use only our own milk. So we can make sure that the cows are on full grass before we, you make cheese. In fact, a couple weeks this summer when the pastures got kind of dry and we had to supplement the cows with feeding with hay and silage, we didn't make cheese. So we have those kinds of controls available to us.
I see.
We also...
Because the cheese would have been inferior.
Yeah. Yeah. When it's the fresh grass that gives these flavor compounds that we want to get into the cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And we selected the type of cheese we wanted to make based upon, because it's a cheese that's made from grass-fed cows,
mm-hmm.
cow's milk. It's a raw milk cheese.
Now, did you have to go to Europe to study?
No. We went to the Center for Dairy Research at the University of Wisconsin.
Uh-huh.
Another resource available to us as, Wisconsin producers that wouldn't be as easily available to other people. But once we decided we wanted to make a Beaufort style cheese, I went to the Center for Dairy Research, and they have a little lab with very small vats. You can make experimental batches, and we made eight. In the summer of 1999, we made eight separate vats of cheese, starting with the traditional Beaufort make procedure. But as I say, we had to make adjustments and changes, so we made eight variations of the traditional Beaufort make procedure. And then after that, we convened taste panels. I mean, I had taste panels at home with friends, but even at the university, they convened a couple taste panels and tried these different makes of cheese. We were trying to decide which we liked the best out of these eight minor variants.
Mm-hmm.
And by about Christmas time, we had decided on which one we liked the best. And then it was a matter of getting set up. I had to establish an aging facility and had to get some financing and, had to buy some equipment and things.
The cheese is aged in limestone caves?
No, it's aged in a controlled environment. It's a walk-in cooler,
uh-huh.
high humidity cooler, that simulates the environment of a limestone cave.
Oh, I see.
So it's 55 degrees, 95% humidity, and we actually introduce a bacteria in our smear or the wash, the solution that we wash the cheese with. We introduce, it's called the bee linens. It's a bacteria that we add to a brine
solution.
Oh, I know
the bee linens from Mary Falk.
Yes.
Well, exactly. Is also a master cheesemaker.
Yes.
Up in Grantsburg. She makes the Trade Lake Cedar.
That's correct.
Benjamin Mitt.
That also won an award at the American Cheese Society this year. She's won many awards for her cheeses and has really been a force for taking the artisan cheese experience or movement or whatever you want to call it in Wisconsin to the next level and pushing for that. And Mike is definitely, another proponent of that as well.
Uh-huh. Now tell us a little bit about this brine solution and introducing bacteria. Most of us think of all bacteria as something to be eliminated, but that's really where the flavors are in cheese, right?
That's correct. And for a lot of people, I mean, I think it's important to understand this surface ripened style of cheese. The European counterparts that started with this. Some of the stories that I've heard on how it first originated was, and a lot of, especially in the Burgundy area of France, there's a lot of monks and monasteries that were making cheese, and they didn't have lots of resources for meat, and so part of what their cheese making was to try to simulate having meat. So they wanted to get as much flavor as they possibly could out of this milk and into these cheeses. And so rubbing different
flavor
things.
Flavor and also nutrition, apparently.
Yeah, and rubbing these different bacteria on, on the outsides of these cheese to ripen them from the outside in, ended up giving them such great levels of flavor that it could simulate what meat would be like to them. So, like Mike was saying, this is the French-style Gruyère, counterparts being in France, Beaufort, Comté, Abondance, which we have all here just to look at as reference points. But not just those cheeses, there are many different kinds of surface ripened cheeses throughout Europe. And what got me so excited about Pleasant Ridge when I first tried it was you don't see so much of that kind of cheese making in the United States, but especially not in Wisconsin. And when I got the phone call that there was this new French style Gruyere, you know, my eyes lit up immediately. And then when we tried it, we got really excited. And it's been a huge success for us. And this is a great style of cheese that more people should probably get into. But it is definitely a specific thing. It's not something that a lot of cheese factories are set up for, because like Mike was saying, he has to have an aging facility to get this cheese to the point where the flavors are there.
How long is it aged?
A minimum of 4 months. The competition cheese have been aged 10 months. And I think it'll be just fine up to 2 years, probably maybe longer.
But you beat him.
With
the 4 months? Your cheese was still ranked higher.
Well, the cheese in the competition, in the American Cheese Society competition, that was a 10-month cheese.
Oh, your cheese was a 10-month
cheese. Our cheese was a 10-month cheese.
I see.
We started marketing our cheese at 4 months.
I see, now I understand.
And this is a seasonal product, and this is something that I deal with and I talk to customers about all the time. When his cheese hit 4 months last year, Odessa at La Trois tasted it. He brought it to her. She said, "This cheese is ready. Let's use it now." And at that point, she gave me a phone call and said, "You need to sell this cheese." And I said, "Okay, let's try it." And so we tried it. We're like, "Oh, this is really great. It tastes good. Let's see what we can do with it." But if you walk into my store today, the cheese that I have is right now, because we're towards the end of last year's batch, is over a year old at this point. And so that flavor is, you know, a completely different flavor.
Oh, now, so it keeps changing as it gets older.
Mm-hmm, right, it definitely keeps
changing. It doesn't necessarily get better? Is there a peak somewhere?
We're trying to figure that out.
Well, yeah, we don't know where the peak is. The flavors get more intense.
Uh-huh.
The younger cheese, the flavors aren't as intense. Maybe more, a little more complex. You find a lot more variety of flavor, and then as it age, all those flavors get more intense, and then the stronger ones tend to dominate.
Oh well, this is like wine.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah,
definitely.
As the cheese ages, it expels moisture, and the pieces, you know, the cheese gets physically smaller. The flavors start to concentrate, and you start to get calcium deposits and crystals in there that have all this flavor that you couldn't get from a young cheese, And we were discussing earlier about, it's all like a matters of opinion. Like Odessa said, 4 months, this thing's ready. And I was like, cool. And she's right, it was ready and it was tasty. But it's like a completely different cheese at 1 year. And so it's a matter of opinion which one you like. But it's great to be able to try the different, you know, ages.
Fascinating, so. Really fascinating. We don't usually think of cheese as a seasonal product. You know, we're used to thinking of tomatoes and peaches as seasonal, but not necessarily a cheese.
Well, and that has to do with the technology that's used in producing milk and producing cheese. And, you know, and going back to the old methods, I mean, you're going to get better cheese. You're going to get better flavors. You're going to get better milk. Mike, using just the pasture milk is going to taste different from a cheesemaker who makes his cheese year-round, who buys his milk from a truck that's coming from different farms that are doing a variety of things to get the milk out of their cows, you know. And that's why his is so important, because it is this very special milk and it has these flavor components to it.
Well, this is obviously part of the slow food movement.
Yes. Yeah, in fact, our cheese will be at that slow food convention or meeting that they're having in Italy late this month.
Oh, wonderful. We're talking with Mike Gingrich, dairy farmer, owner, and cheesemaker of Uplands Cheese. He won Best in Show at the American Cheese Society for his Pleasant Ridge Reserve, this artisan cheese made from the non-pasteurized milk of a single herd of Wisconsin cows, fed and managed using old world practices. And Benjamin Orphan is with us, who can tell you anything about cheese in Wisconsin and cheese in the world. He runs the cheese, beer, wine, and coffee department at Whole Foods in Madison. All those things you're not supposed to eat too much of.
That's right. We were talking about this the other day. It's the Department of Moderation. But like I said too, I didn't end up there on accident. It's all the good stuff.
So you can join in by calling 1-800-642-1234. 642-1234. In Madison, please call 263-1890. I'm Jean Baraka. You're listening to All About Food on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Take a break from the picnic and make a contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio at WPR.org this Labor Day week. give online the funky, swampy music, in-depth news, and intelligent talk coming to you. Use your charge card and get whatever amount you choose. Go to WPR.org anytime. Why not? Right now.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Whole Foods Market on University Avenue in Madison, featuring natural, organic, and specialty foods. Great tasting food is only natural. Whole Foods Market.
Benjamin has brought in a whole array of excellent cheeses. And I wonder, Benjamin, as you talk about them, if you could sort of place Mike's cheese and Wisconsin artisan cheese in the landscape of our artisanal cheese processes and where we are. You know, Wisconsin, of course, has a long-held reputation as cheesemaker. But unfortunately, we still produce the most cheese,
correct,
as I understand it, but not necessarily the best.
Well, the total number of pounds being produced in Wisconsin of cheese is still the highest in the country. California's fluid dairy has surpassed Wisconsin. But what we were talking about, what I'd like to see more of, and I'm seeing more of constantly, is the real specialty cheeses, the handmade artisan cheeses. An example of the ratio we're at right now is at the American Cheese Society conference this year. We had, I believe, nine different dairies from Wisconsin enter their cheeses. There were 28 from California. There were 10 from Vermont, and then the list goes down from there. But what we're doing, it's kind of a paradigm shift for Wisconsin. We've always grown bigger and faster, bigger factories, more production. We have so much milk available to us that these factories really started to flourish, and the old style of production, the mom and pop farm who make their own cheese and, you know, market it locally, started to die out. Well, that's coming back in Wisconsin. People like Mary Falk and people like Mike Gingrich, they're doing these things. There are small farms that are making. And you can come to the farmer's market in Madison and buy goat milk or goat cheese that you can't even get. You can't get at my store, you can't get in any store around town because they just don't make enough of it to even sell it. And these are exciting things. And so we're seeing more and more of that happen. And even some larger cheese production facilities like Rothkäse down in Monroe, where, you know, it's a big building. There's a lot of employees. You could call it a cheese factory, but they're making a lot of, all their cheeses they're making by hand. These aren't machines that never, you know, that human hands never see. So it is becoming more of an exciting thing. And I think the people that helped you develop your recipe with the master cheesemaking program, the things they're doing at the university, they're really pushing for cheesemakers to get back to these old world methods and making these specialty cheeses. And
well, that
just
must mean that there's a new economy. I mean, they wouldn't be promoting this if it wasn't economically viable. Well, what makes it economically viable, Mike?
Well, I mean, it's fairly marginal economically because your volumes are so small and there's so much labor involved. There's a lot of handwork involved. But
similar to what we're seeing in the wine industry too, with like California wines versus European wines. The cost of producing these products can be a lot higher. And like Mike's saying, it's, you know, they get a good amount of money for their cheese and it's great, and that's what makes it viable for them. And why the consumer is willing to pay it too, is bottom line is flavor and quality. And I can sell mild Wisconsin cheddar for $3.99 a pound all day long because, you know, people are going to come and want it. But I can also sell, you know, Pleasant Ridge Reserve at four times that price because the flavor's there.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't get that flavor from any of the other factory-made cheeses. And, you know, people will pay for it if it's quality. They're not afraid to spend that money. And, you know, I don't blame them. It's the same thing from my buying perspective.
I will pay what I need to pay to get high quality cheese, and I get that high quality unless you're doing everything that's like my reason.
Okay, let's turn to a car. Hope brings in some medicine. Go ahead, Hope.
I have a question. How did this I remember when we heard the unpasteurized milk, but I also remember the address of under the table, the thickness of that. Well, now we tend to glorify the whole world, but we forget.
Mm-hmm.
But pasteurization just to make a milk supply safe. Now, my question is, I believe the cheese would be delicious, but
is it safe?
Is it safe?
Yeah, good question.
I can take that. So, in the United States, if you're producing unpasteurized cheese, it needs to be aged for a minimum of 60 days.
Correct.
Same for importing European cheese or from anywhere else for that matter. And the idea of the 60-day threshold is that when you have listeria or some kind of unwanted bacteria or something that could be in the cheese that would be harmful, that in that aging process of 60 days, as the cheese is being tested constantly for these types of things, it'll come out in the cheese. You'll know. I mean, if you've got a batch of cheese that has something in it that's not supposed to be there, but before 60 days hits, you're going to know it's there and it's not going to be sold. And so there's, as far as I'm concerned, there's really no, there shouldn't be any health fear for that. Now, talking about fluid milk and fresh milk that you're getting from cows and drink consuming almost immediately, that's a different story altogether, and it's not even legal under the state of Wisconsin to sell brown milk. So
you mentioned that all of your favorite cheeses are unpasteurized. What are they? Did you bring them?
Yes, I did. So the Parmigiano Reggiano from the northern part of Italy, I mean, this is probably the king of cheeses for everyone in the world. This is a raw milk cheese that's not even exported from the country until it's been aged for 2 years. The Gruyères we've been talking about, the Swiss Gruyère, which is also a staple, you know, the principal ingredient in fondue, that is also made from raw milk. And there are laws in these European countries that say you can't put the name on your cheese and market it unless it meets certain criteria. So if you're making Roquefort in France, it has to be from sheep's milk and it has to be unpasteurized milk. And you can't get that label put onto your cheese unless you can prove that that's how it was made. We don't have those kinds of laws here, and it's because we have a different culture of food. And it's the same thing in the wine industry. You know, the Europeans, they take it very, very seriously, and there's, you know, a lot of money involved too. But these cheeses, they are my favorite because they are raw milk, they are the traditional ones, and they have the most amount of flavor. And also, we'll have European cheeses where I'll carry two different ones, like a Spanish Manchego. I'll have a raw milk version, handmade, and then I'll have a, you know, more inexpensive factory-style pasteurized version. And I let customers decide. I mean, I'm not going to be so egotistical that I'm only going to stock cheeses that I like. I like people to come and taste the differences and make the decision themselves.
Uh-huh. Okay, Bill is next in Madison. Go ahead, Bill.
Hi. I had some of your cheese at the Fulldale Farmer's Market towards the end of the season last year. And you gave me a slice and you wrapped it in paper that was not cellophane. It was smooth on one side and not on the other. And I took it home and it lasted easily a week or so in the fridge. Little by little, it finally got eaten. But I brought it elsewhere in town later in the year and it was wrapped in cellophane. Or something like that. And there was no breathing or something, but it didn't taste the same. And I'm wondering if that really does make a difference, or is there something else that was different, maybe it was a different batch or something like that, because I don't think I'm ever going to want to buy your cheese again wrapped that way.
There is a difference. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that the cheese is still aging, and as it ages, it produces volatile compounds that want to escape, and when it's wrapped in plastic, they held within it. Now, I found that if you take it out of the plastic and put it in the refrigerator for 24, 48 hours in something that will breathe like wax paper, it recovers. But when you first take it out of that plastic, sometimes you'll get an ammonia odor and some of these other volatile compounds that are not particularly pleasant. You will get that aroma, but it does recover. I mean, once it's had a chance to expel those gases, then it's I find it's back to what it was before. So I would guess you got a different vat of cheese. It does change through the seasons.
Huh.
Not only does it change with age, but because all our cows calve at approximately the same time, all the cows are the same stage of lactation through the season. So early season milk is early lactation milk, which is different than late lactation milk. And so not only are we getting a seasonal change from the grasses, but the fact that the cows are in a different stage of lactation from early to late season makes a difference too. So there is some variability from vat to vat.
Mm-hmm.
And I would guess that's probably more of what you tasted.
I will say though, on the issue of plastic, which comes up for me quite frequently, when we wrap cheeses and put them out for sale at our store, we try to take each cheese into account and try to understand where it's at in its lifespan and wrap it accordingly. So there are some.
Thank you.